It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Bitch, it's the third. Calm down.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Ho, ho, ho. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode, ho, ho, of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming
Not
live
nice.
On digital stream radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Did I not tell you to flush the goddamn toilet?
I know. You said not to.
No,
that thing's so
I know.
Long.
I did it purposely.
And there's definitely a correction there. It's ho, ho, ho.
That's right. All right. My name is Tom.
Really? Really? Oh, really? You want to walk down that road?
Oh, Lord. My name is Tom, and I'm your host. And as always, I'm here with my ho, ho, hoes, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all. Nick, or I'm going to kill you, Chris. Trish. Hi.
And good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
So we're a little giddy today. I'm feeling good. Are you feeling good?
Haven't decided yet.
Yeah, I'm just going to put it out there. I'm going to be speaking cursive.
Well, of course. So before we came on the air, and of course, our Patreons got to actually experience that entire conversation before people get to listen to the live stream. Is that toilet still going?
It's still going. I listened.
I didn't.
And I had asparagus for lunch, so he had to just bask in that.
Oh... It's Chris. Can someone go check and see why that thing is still running? Wiggle the handle or something.
It usually takes a long time.
I gotta fix it. Let's see.
Oh, Lord. It'll stop soon. Just
anyway.
Continue.
Welcome, everyone, to the show. We've got a lot of stories, but, you know, so much that obviously we're going to talk about. But I wanted to, as always... kick it over to our resident bartender because we're going to be talking about a suggested cocktail for all you folks. So, Christopher, why don't you tell us what we should be drinking?
Yes, it's going to be a wintry cocktail. Mm. So, you know, this week we're suggesting a nice wintry cocktail to keep you warm on them upcoming chilly nights, you know.
Mm, they're coming.
That's right. So we're going to present to you the grog.
The grog.
It's actually an old school classic cocktail.
Of course it is.
Now, in its earliest incarnation, grog was merely a mixture of hot rum and water with an occasional sprinkling of spices.
She totally would not drink this.
Yeah, definitely not. And like British sailors used to drink this. The phrase grog blossoms is a reference to the broken blood vessels in the nose caused by drinking too much. So that's where this comes from. So it's an easy drink. It consists of 2 ounces dark rum, 1/2 ounce fresh lime juice, 1 teaspoon brown sugar, 4 ounces of hot water,
ooh,
and then a slice of orange and a cinnamon stick. So you mix the rum, lime juice, brown sugar, and hot water in a mug, garnished with an orange slice and a cinnamon stick, and this was courtesy of chowhound.com.
But that sounds like really, really delicious.
I would try it.
And it sounds all like warm and like...
You do need to fix your toilet. I just had a plumber, okay?
You have to like open the top part up?
Yes, I literally had to open it up and like close the little flap thing.
But who broke it? Because that's never happened to me while I've lived in this
house.
And
I didn't flush.
Then why did you bring it up?
Because it
was
still
running.
Can
somebody go check the toilet?
Because it was running.
Because Trish broke it.
And I wasn't the one that used the bathroom. Thank you very much. But I love you, boo. All right, so the drink sounds amazing. Anything that you put an actual cinnamon stick in, see, for me, cinnamon is life. It really is. I absolutely love cinnamon. Pay attention to me,
it's
boys.
So good.
I'm talking to you.
I'm sorry.
Do you talk
baby.
A lot, Tom?
No. Do talk a lot.
All right, I'll shut up now. Next.
I like cinnamon, too. I put it in my coffee.
Do you put powdered cinnamon or like a stick?
Powdered.
But powdered is good, too. But have you ever, like, had made oatmeal and then, like, stuff like...
No, I do a French press. So I, like, add it in with the grounds. So it's, like...
And then the grinds.
I think grinds are after the fact.
Oh, you're right.
Are.
I think. I don't know. Hans will let us know.
I know, right? Hans,
I already feel like it's gonna be... tough Trish against the world today. Yeah,
so. Exactly. So, get ready. Pull those guns out, girl. Roll them sleeves up. You turn the heat on. Roll them sleeves up.
You're not even funny.
I can't with these two. No, but anyway, so why don't we talk a little bit about our weekends before we jump into some stories? So I'm going to kick it off to Trish. Let me kick it off to Chris. You don't mind, do you? Because he's been traveling, so I want to know about his travels. So, Christopher.
What do you mean I've been traveling?
Oh, you've been traveling. I heard you were up in Mass. Who were you visiting? Tell us.
I was not in Mass.
Yes, you were.
I wasn't. I was kind of in Mass. Uh-huh. Like, for a little bit. Mm-hmm. No, Saturday night after work, I drove up to my parents' house in Windsor Locks, and I stayed in. I was a good boy. I had a couple beers, and I wrote a paper that I have to finish tonight. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, Sunday, I went out on a date.
You did?
Big fucking surprise. Mm.
You know what? I'm entitled to happiness, too, okay, bitch?
Yeah, right, bitch. I'm not saying you're not.
She was super cunty when I got here and said something to her. Anyway, moving on, because it's my story.
Yeah, she was. She was like, no, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Like, yeah, thanks for the support.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, you know, we got together, we went out, we had a couple beers, and then we did an escape room. And then we had
another one.
Yeah, I'm hooked on that. I'm obsessed. We did this one in Berlin. It was so cool. So fucking hard, though. So fucking hard. Mm. So we did that. And then,
did you have 30 seconds before you were like due to like time out, or were you able to make it enough time? Were you like super smart this time?
No,
or semi smart.
This one was meant for 8 people.
Okay,
and it was the two of us. So you're supposed to do it in an hour. We did an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
So we did finish it, but not in time.
Okay.
But we did complete it.
So you died, basically.
Yeah, actually, yes, because we didn't find the serum to save us from the bubonic plague. But other than that, then we went on to have a couple more drinks. We went to see a movie. I forgot the name of it. It's like some possession movie. It was fucking stupid. And it's like an Exorcist movie.
He'll never take you to another movie date again.
But. No, it was just not a good movie. And then we just did takeout and hung out at my parents' house. And then
did you tell him that it wasn't a good? Like,
oh yeah, movie? No, I told him. After.
When you say hang out or hung out, like what are you talking about? Like
we had Ruby Tuesdays
and
did he have Christopher Wednesdays?
I believe the fifth.
Was it Creme Day Thursday? Penis?
I don't have to go into any more details.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She hooked up with him. Mm.
All right. So, Nicholas, why don't you tell us about your weekend? You can skip that whole ordeal. The other one.
Oh, no. I'm totally skipping that one. 100%. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. She got a phone call. I had a decent weekend. Relaxed.
Yeah.
I went over to a friend's house, helped him decorate his tree, and then we went out the night following, which was fun and interesting.
It wasn't who I think it is, right?
No, it is. Yeah, no, it was super domestic and weird, and I don't want to talk about it out loud.
I mean, you have like a 1 of 5 chance to pick who it was.
Oh,
was it Steve, or Steve? Is that what you're trying to ask?
Steve or Steve?
Oh my God! I was at a gas station and I was like opening the door for some. I wouldn't say she's an older lady, but she, you know, she's an older woman, and she was like, "Hi, Steve," and I was like, "No, no, my name is Nick." I'm like, is it that obvious that I'm surrounded by these men in my life?
Yeah.
Don't blame it on dementia. Like, it just comes off. Like, you can just smell it.
It's like Elena on Vampire Diaries. Stefan, Steve. Yeah, they're all S-T's.
I just
don't get it.
Steves out of his pores. That's what it is.
I think that's what it is, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what else?
It's like
that was really
man, this man opening the door smells like regret right now. It's got to be a Steve.
So Nick, you are in a new position at work. How's that going?
Really well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Because I know that you were super excited. You were super nervous. You were doing like all this like neurotic stuff that you normally do, and I love you for it because you just want to make sure that you do things right. But I'm glad. So all is going well.
To an extreme, yes.
Yeah. Is it different than your other position? How do you feel? Do you feel like you've got a little bit more? Is it easier than your previous job?
It's 100% different. I can't compare the two.
Doesn't seem like you could, actually. Yeah.
Totally
different job.
It's nice to have the ability to leave work and not think about it and not get a phone call and not have to worry about something. But the other stress is my job is now to bring in money for the theater so the theater itself can thrive and survive. And that's the stress that I deal with on a daily basis. But that's going really, really well.
But I do tell you, you are very driven and you are very personable. So I think that you're going to do fantastic. Yeah. And I've told you this before. And when we first had the conversation and we've talked about this on the show, I told you that you're going to do great in this position because you are built for it. You we'll lend see. Yourself to being able to talk to people and engage with people in a way that they are responsive. So I think you're going to do well.
Yeah, basically I'm like, this is what I do. Give me your money.
Yeah.
And he no longer has to like take phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning like, this toilet paper is chapping my ass. What can you do about it? And then have to like fucking fly to Walgreens to get him like fucking Charmin or whatever that shit is.
Okay, that's an extreme that never actually happened.
But I would imagine something close to that probably happened.
Probably, yeah. No, it's actually, it's really nice. I feel less of a, I don't know, I feel like more of a person. I have more time for myself. It's nice.
And she's dressing up like super tight, like super cute too.
Not today.
Well, not today. Well, you've got a sweater. You don't look bad at all. But typically, she would have a nice little tie on, and you know she's looking cute, and I like it, and I think it's good.
Yeah, it's like getting up and getting the bus it ready is a lot of work.
Yes, it is.
It's a process.
And she's got. And a she whole has to put a
tie
kit.
On now too.
Yeah, I keep telling her, you know, she keep a Bondo kit here, but she's like, no, it's way too expensive to have two Bondo kits.
Yep.
But you know, it works. Well, for me, I worked. I wanted to go out Friday night, right? Because Friday nights are usually like the only nights that I have where I'm not doing anything, and so I wanted to work, and well. Excuse me. I didn't want to work. I just wanted to relax, but then I also wanted to go out. And then I said to myself, all right, well, let me just eat something first. And then I ate and I passed out on my couch and woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Proud of you.
Oh, don't you love that?
Yeah, it's like the best. But I needed the rest because, you know, I work hard every week and then I work every weekend. And so it's kind of tough to sort of kind of find that one night where you can actually go out and have drinks without feeling exhausted. And like him right now.
Yeah, I was up at 3 a.m. today, too.
Proud of you. And and then Saturday I worked, and Sunday we ran karaoke, and that was fun. We had a group of people that came out that were so enthusiastic about the whole thing. My God.
I know.
It was a very, very interesting night, to say the least. But it was fun, and you know, and now, Monday morning, oh, my God, I want to murder everybody in my office. But that's a figurative way of saying I'm just not a morning person on Monday mornings. I really don't want to murder people.
I'm not a morning person.
I just need to have
Monday,
coffee.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, so,
you know, but you know, we have lives and bills to pay, so we have to fake it, right?
Fake it till you make it.
That's right. So, all right. So listen. So we've got stories that we want to cover. I don't think that this is going to be a very long show. I hope not. But
I keep forgetting that. Our mascot's up there, Dookie.
That's right. Dookie's Dookie. Behind us.
And
all
I love
the way up
Dookie,
there on the
so
corner. On the corner of the television. So if you're not familiar with Dookie, Dookie is actually the mascot for Gay Talk 2.0. And it was actually compliments of Squatty Potty, which was a company that makes amazing products. Chris, would you tell us a little bit about it?
You'll never poop better in your life.
Right. So, exactly. And so, we actually had Bobby Edwards on the show. He's the
CEO
of Squatty Potty. And then we also had...
An inventor.
His communications, at the time, was his communications director, Linda Stay, who has an amazing story on her own right. Look for that episode. I think you won't be disappointed. But it's all in all, it's great. And
I have to get one for my parents' house because I stayed there two nights and I had to like drag a WB Mason paper. Mm-hmm. Like
I was going to say, where's your suitcase?
Yeah, no, I didn't have a suitcase. I just had my backpack. But I like had to go in my brother's old room, grab that fucking... big box that held like 12 reams of paper and put that by the toilet and put my legs up to be able to, you know, get the maximum emptiness.
That's amazing.
With ease.
So you remember, I'm actually reminiscing back, right? It's the holidays and it's that time to reminisce. So you remember that when we reached out to Squatty Potty, they initially had us do like a little competition and you had to send us like your best poop story.
Oh, yeah.
You remember the winners?
I thought about that the other day, actually.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah,
yes.
From Las Vegas.
Yeah, from Las Vegas. And they sent us their shitty story.
I forgot about that. Because
they squirted on like the shower curtain.
Well, what ended up happening was, is like, for whatever reason, I think the mom and the daughter ended up getting really sick. And they were both throwing up, but one was throwing up out of both holes. So not only did she get it in the toilet bowl, but she got it in the shower curtain.
Yeah, the whole family was sick.
It was insane. But they ended up sending us all the stories via email. We were reading
and
them.
And picture.
There was a picture. And they ended up winning a free Squatty Potty, and Squatty Potty actually sent it to them and they got it and they received it, and it was amazing. And
we should do that again.
We should. I think we should. I think we should reach out to Squatty Potty and see.
Let's give out more Squatty Potties.
Yeah, I know. It's always make everybody poop.
It's the holiday
poop
season.
Right.
Everybody gets to poop.
I love buying Squatty Potties for people. That is going to be my grab bag gift for Sandpiper, the Christmas party of this year. I'm pumped.
Do you only get to like buy one and then you put it in?
It's like everyone buys gifts, you put it in, everyone gets a number, and then you grab something.
I hope
my boss gets it.
Oh my God, he's gonna love you.
He's gonna be all Greek, like, the fuck is this?
I'd rather sit for 45 minutes.
You are going to like get, but once he tries it though, you get free food.
Are you
life.
Kidding me? He probably slathers that shit in olive oil and that just makes it come right out.
I can't.
All right. Anyway,
that's his version.
So we're
of
moving
Potty.
On
yes, we
now.
Are. All right. So, December 1st was 2 days ago. It was Saturday, and since it was AIDS Awareness Day, we weren't actually broadcasting. So we
World AIDS Day.
World AIDS Day. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we weren't broadcasting. We wanted to sort of kind of talk about what the HIV and AIDS has meant to the community and what it's done to the community, you know, since we started seeing cases come up, for example, in the early 80s, and how impactful this virus has been to our community and the world, period. Since 1988, December 1st has been designated as World AIDS Day, a day to bring awareness about HIV and AIDS in an effort to fight against the virus that killed so many. In the early days of discovery, it was men in the LGBT community that began to exhibit symptoms of this mysterious virus that was initially dubbed GRID, which was basically short for gay-related immune deficiency. And with that came a lot of persecution of people, gay men, in our communities, from people who really didn't understand what was going on mm-hmm. around them. And we know a lot of the stories. We know a lot of the things that happen, and people who were affected. That being said, this brings me to the story that I would like to highlight today. David Kuhn from Out.com wrote a beautiful yet very heartbreaking story about an exceptional woman by the name of Ruth Corker Burks.
And we've talked about her on the show before.
We have. But this particular story is a little bit different. Ruth, beginning at the age of 25, she cared for hundreds of dying people with AIDS, many of which were gay men abandoned by their relatives at a time when certain death was imminent, and as little was known about the virus that spread so fast and affected so many. So the basis of this one particular article that Mr. Kuhns wrote was just to talk about what this nurse did. And she really wasn't a nurse. She was actually at the hospital visiting a friend who was suffering from cancer. And she had, you know, run into a situation where she was observing nurses playing back and forth, picking straws, trying to figure out, you know, who was going to get the highest count of straws before they had to actually go into this room that was taped off and take care of a patient that actually had AIDS, because they were afraid. They were scared. They didn't know what it was, and they were afraid of getting it. And so that's what patients had to deal with back in the 80s, in the early 80s. And so I started reading the article, and I was getting very sad, you know, reading about all the things that this woman documented and all her memories of what she went through with her, the people that she cared for. You know, he was someone 25 years old. She's young, doesn't really have an obligation to do this, but she felt the need to sort of kind of not only reach out to a family member. She had a cousin that was gay in Hawaii. She sort of kind of reached out and said, what do you know about this? Tell me a little bit more. I'm seeing that, you know, we have patients in this hospital that I'm visiting and no one's really taking care of them. And so she took it upon herself to sort of kind of start visiting with these people and taking care of them and taking them under her wing and really showing them a lot of support and love at a time where their family members weren't even acknowledging the fact that they were in a hospital. So as I'm reading the story, there was it's a very, very long article. I will post it on tonight's post. I think that if you read it, you'll understand where I'm coming from and why I wanted to talk about this. But there was a couple of passages in the article that really hit me right in the heart. And the first one was while she described her encounter with one of the first of many who she cared for. He was in his final hours of life, and he had asked for his mom. Now, Burks knew mom would never come. He was on his own. Hours away from death, a young man was delusional and mistook Burks, for his mom. She basically just sat behind beside him. She bathed his face with a cloth and told him that she was there. He's believing that at this point that Burks is actually his mom. And she said, quote, "I stayed with him for 13 hours while he took his last breath on earth." And she said, Since at least
the late 1880s.
Yes. Burke's kin have been buried. This is another passage in the story, and she's basically talking about how she came across a certain amount of plots that her family had in this particular cemetery, the File Cemetery. And basically, she says that since at least the 1880s, the Burke's kin have been buried in File Cemetery. Half an acre of red dirt on top of a hill at Hot Springs, Arkansas. When Burks was a little girl, she said that her mother got into a final and epic row with Burks' uncle to make sure that his branch of the family would never lie in the same dirt as the rest of the them. Her mother quietly bought every available grave space in the cemetery, about 262 plots. Now that is like true determination to like stick it to your relatives, right?
Yeah, seriously.
And they visited the cemetery most Sundays after church. When she was young, Burke said that her mother would often sarcastically remark on the holdings, looking out over the cemetery and telling her daughter, "Someday all of this is going to be yours."
It's like Mufasa.
Exactly. It's like, you see,
everything the light touches
is yours. So, you know, I'm reading some of the stuff that was in this article just so that you can see how intricate it is. It was really in-depth. It really talked about her feelings. It really talked about her experiences. And it left me, like, aghast. I was sitting and reading, and I was just like, wow.
So what's so important about these 262 plots?
So, to go into that, you really have to understand that, you know, she didn't know what she was going to do with all these people that were in this hospital that she was caring for. You know, they were dying, and none of the family members wanted to claim the bodies. They didn't want to come and say, you know, "This is my son. We're going to take responsibility of making final arrangements," etc. And so she took it upon herself to decide that because now she had all these plots, every person that died in her care while she was caring for them that didn't have a final resting place, she buried at the cemetery, which is called the File Cemetery over in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And so we have a list of people that are sitting there, well, at this point resting in their final resting place, that have no family members that goes to visit them, but only the people that know, like this amazing person that would go and preside and speak for these people who were pretty much silenced by a disease that was just devastating to our community. There were a lot of things. Another part of the story that really got to me was when she was describing how, because of the fact that they had no one and they couldn't really, she couldn't really reach out to someone for information in case someone passed, she felt an odd sensation while she was sitting with some of these people that were about to die and filling out their own death certificates. That's insane. And, you know, because Burks knew that she wouldn't be able to call like a family member or a mother or a father or someone or a brother, they would sit there and fill it out together, she said. Can you imagine filling out your own death certificate before you die? I mean, can you really conceive that?
Hopefully I don't have to.
In our day and age, I don't think we won't, but this was reality. This was the reality for a lot of our brothers and sisters in the LGBT community. And, you know, she went on to say that, you know, unfortunately, she didn't have all the information that was needed. Sometimes, like, the mother's maiden name or, you know, other information, birth dates, place of birth, etc. And so she would literally just organize, like, these pizza parties and sit down with these people that were terminally ill to fill out the information for their own birth certificates, just so that
death
they would
certificates.
Have, excuse me, death certificates, just so that they could have that information.
Mm-hmm. And just like to try to bring some comfort, like, hey, let's have a pizza party and we'll do this kind of boring paperwork together.
You know, and
boring?
Yeah.
It really struck me. And I said,
yeah,
you know,
that's rough. I had never heard that story before.
It was tough, you know, when to find out that you have to sit with someone and fill out your own death certificate really just shook me. It shook me because it's not something that I can understand. And I can only read it and only imagine what it feels like.
Because it's what it is. It's not only acknowledging, but it's accepting your fate.
Mm-hmm.
As you're sitting there and you're eating a slice of pepperoni with the sweetheart, you are filling out the paperwork that says, I am now dead.
Yeah. And there's so much, there's so many more. I mean, it's a rather long story, but there was a part in the story in which she was talking about, you know, how she really had an admiration for men in the LGBT community and partners, as she called it in the story, because, you know, here you have people who have families, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, and none of them were coming to visit them because they were scared of and ashamed of their children. And yet you had your partners that came in every day, day in, day out, and had to sit there and watch their lovers pass away, mm-hmm. knowing that they were shortly right behind them,
right.
that they were going to meet the same fate. And she said that that was the embodiment of being human and being in love and being wanting to just be a better person. And she goes, and when marriage equality was passed, I said to myself, that is well deserved because these people have been through hell and back. And she ended up having a heart attack, or I believe it was a stroke. And she had to learn how to read. She had to learn how to write, how to walk again. She's now living in Florida, but she did put out a statement not too long ago in where she says that before I'm gone, I would like to see a memorial erected at Files Cemetery. Something to tell the people the story, a plaque, a stone, a listing of names of unremembered dead people who lie here. Someday, she said, I'd love to get a monument that says, this is what happened. In 1984, it started. They kept coming and coming. And they knew that they would be remembered, loved, and taken care of, and that someone would say kind words over them when they died. It's a tough story to read.
Very moving.
And it shook me. And I'm sitting at work and I'm crying. And my coworkers are walking by and I'm like, what's going on? You're right. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I just sort of kind of read something that shook me to the core because we know, right? We lost hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people in our community to AIDS.
I have a concept of what we lost. I have the notion, the knowledge, but I do not have the experience. So
we'll never have that experience.
No, we won't. But it's crazy to think, like, just watching some of the recent films that have come out and having them just taking cards out of their Rolodex and putting it in the drawer and saying, oh, there it is, and just card after card after card every day. It's crazy. And yet the community is still under attack. So,
yeah. And, you know, I'm grateful for science, which, of course, is also under attack under this administration. I'm grateful for science and being able to find a way to be able to afford people who are desperate for life an opportunity to be able to live a healthy life.
and to be able to manage a virus that really has wreaked havoc, not only in our community, but all over the world. And I think that that's the embodiment of what having or remembering people on AIDS World Day is all about. And knowing that it was a big fight and we're still fighting it and we're still finding treatments and things that will help, but we haven't found a cure. And we still need to continue to have that drive to find it, to get there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we are moving forward with it.
No, of course.
And with that being said, it's a perfect segue to lighten it up a little bit. Ready for this one? Meanwhile,
in Canada!
That hasn't happened in a while.
It has not, and I was so excited to see this. Canada becomes the first country to endorse U equals U. Canada signed on the global campaign that will directly improve the lives of people living with HIV and reduce the stigma. In recognition of World AIDS Day, the Honorable Jeanette Petipats Taylor.
That's not a word.
That's, well, Canada's.
It's her name.
Minister of Health officially endorsed the U equals U campaign, which is the undetectable equals untransmittable.
And that's important.
Very much. It's very important.
It, because there's a stigma around being undetectable. You know, a lot of people think that that because you are HIV positive, that your world comes to an end, that you cannot have a very healthy, fluid relationship with someone that you love, and that you're not able to experience the same things that everybody else does. That is not positive, right? Because we're not going to say normal, because there's nothing abnormal about people who are positive.
Right.
They're humans. So that's important.
Yeah, and I just want to point out that Minister Taylor took part in a red ribbon flag raising ceremony hosted by AIDS Committee in Ottawa on Parliament Hill with people living with HIV and Canadian AIDS organizations from across the country to sign the consensus statement. She later attended the World AIDS Day and Aboriginal AIDS Awareness Week kickoff event co-hosted by the Canadian Aboriginal AIDS Network, the Interagency Coalition on AIDS and Development, and the, ready for this one, Pauktutik Inuit Women of Canada, according to a press release.
What is that?
Well, it's Inuit.
I know.
Indigenous peoples. But I think that's fantastic.
That's Canada, awesome.
The first nation to really endorse that. If you are undetectable, you are untransmittable.
And, you know, that has been verified by the CDC at this point, mm-hmm. here in the U.S., although it's still a major point of contention in many health circles, which to me, it's like, you know, come on, people. You know, you're doing the studies. People are doing the studies. They're going through this. They know. They're experiencing it. To me, it's time to stop thinking that there's something dirty about being HIV positive, right? It's like,
well, that's what it is. It's fighting the stigma.
Yeah. When you think about, like, for example, when you go on apps like Scruff or Grindr or all these other, and don't even get me started on Grindr, but you go onto all these other apps and it's like no fat, no femmes, be clean. What do you mean be clean? I shower every day. You know what I'm saying? I wash my ass every day. My balls are clean. I do what I got
to
do.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm sorry to say, yes, the stigma needs to be fought, and we need to stand up and say something against it. That being said, if I was put in a situation, whether somebody's detectable or undetectable, I would be nervous, and it would be a point where I would have a thought, and I would need to have a conversation, both with myself and the other person.
And that's important, because too. Communication.
Yeah. Right. I mean, like, our community literally was ravaged by a disease, and if you are HIV positive, as much as that is terrible, and, like, we want to be supportive and love you, it's scary. And it is scary, and it needs to not only be acknowledged that people are scared, and that's why they may walk away, but, like, whether we have the scientific backing or not, like, we're still going to be scared. You know what I mean? And it's terrible, and it sucks, but that's the reality of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the other thing too is that, you know, a lot of people need to also realize that there are treatments out there. And of course, as always, there's condoms
that, that
have been proven very effective in preventing people from spreading HIV. And so these are conversations that you could have with your partner and be honest, you know. So if you're undetectable and I'm on Truvada, do you think that it would be wise for us to use additional protection? What are your thoughts on it? And I think it's a conversation that needs to be had honestly and openly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, sometimes those conversations don't happen until you're almost in the sack, right?
And, yes, I've been there.
And so have I. And so you get into that situation where you're now you're in bed and you're like, by the way, I need to tell you something. And I'm like, okay, well, what is it? And I'm positive. And I'm like, okay. And they'll go on and say, but I'm also undetectable. And I'm like, well, this is the type of conversation that we should have had before we jumped in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we could have made an informed decision as to whether or not this was something that we even wanted to attempt first. Right? Because you never know. I may not be okay with it. I may be okay with it, but you still have to give me that opportunity to make that choice.
Correct.
And so that's also something very important that needs to be talked about. On top of the fact that people also need to stop, you know, stigmatizing people and thinking that they're dirty because they're simply positive.
I don't think of it as a dirty thing. I think of it as like, I'm trying to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
And would I ever, if I ever found myself in that situation, would I proceed? Maybe. Depending on my situation, depending on the other person's situation, depending on the conversation we had. If it was a conversation that happened in my bed right before we were about to have sex, I would definitely not have sex with the person because I don't know if they're being honest about the fact that they're undetectable.
Mm-hmm.
What did I take Truvada today? Did I not take Truvada today? Am I on Truvada? There are so many elements to it. And like at the end of the day, you have to protect yourself.
Right. No, of course. And so there's every variable possible needs to be discussed before you decide that you're going to put someone at risk.
Right. And like
keeping put yourself at risk.
And like Tom said, communication is key.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, keeping in mind too, though, like, if somebody did contract HIV in a sexual experience today, they would be okay and they could live a full life. But that's also a life that is surrounded by medication and doctors. And like, that's another element to it. So like, yes, if I contracted HIV, would I be okay for the long haul? Probably. But I would also have to make sure that I always had insurance and that I could always afford my medication.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a scary, scary, scary thing.
It is. And, you know, one of the beautiful things that I've seen happen in the past 15, 20 years is organizations that are actually stepping up and providing, you know, funds for people who can't afford medications to ensure that they have access to the medications that they need. And, you know, there are a lot of centers all over the U.S. There's a lot of LGBTQ centers like our Pride Center that have a lot of information on companies and organizations that want to help and that you could call and seek and hopefully get the assistance that you need.
Yeah. And I don't want to come off the wrong way. Like, I'm not trying to say that this Canadian movement is amazing. Isn't amazing. It is. And that's what needs to happen. And as a community, that's what we need to do. But what I'm saying is there's a lot of psychology that goes behind our community and why there is a stigma surrounding not only in the heterosexual community, but in the homosexual community, HIV. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that we need to acknowledge and both while acknowledging, embrace it. Because if we don't embrace the fact that it exists, we're not going to change it.
Of course. And we're not going to be able to eradicate. You know, that's our goal in the end, is to find a cure and be able to get rid of it.
We've been trying to do that with you for so long.
I know, but you can't get rid of me.
She just keeps showing up.
I know. Yeah. And like then she makes pimple. That mac and cheese and I keep showing up.
That's right. So either way, you know, there's a lot of information out there. And again, it was a little heavy. But I just wanted to say that, you know what, we are aware of what's happening. There's a reason why we have World AIDS Day, and that is to ensure that we continue to remember what we've lost and what we have to gain. So That being said, amazing Canada. Thank you. Christopher, do you have anything else?
No, I want to go on break.
You want to go on break? All right. So listen, we're going to play some music. When we come back, we have more stories. And of course, on this day in gay history and our gay talk term. So here's some music. We'll be right back. right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. From the break, that was We Need to Be Loved by the incredible Anthony Starbull. And welcome to the second half of the show. We've got a couple of more stories that we're going to talk about, and then we're going to sort of kind of call it quits for tonight, because I am very tipsy. That tequila on an empty stomach has
that'll do it.
Girl,
fabulous.
She needs
that'll
food.
Do it. I know, I'm so hungry.
I do, me too.
I think I have saltine crackers at home, though.
Do you?
So I can maybe eat tonight.
Maybe. You're going to survive on saltine crackers?
Well, I don't think
this Look is at a- her, yeah.
I think if she eats like a bean, she's good for the week.
chips of ice.
Skinny bitch. I love you, though. All right, so anyway, welcome back. We've got more stories. Nicholas, you have a story that you wanted to talk about. This one's a little upsetting, but nonetheless important, and we need to talk about it.
I'm going
to
talk about two things. I'm going to start on a shitty note and end on a positive note.
I love when you do that. Mm. Go for it.
All right, yes! Here we go. We have a gay firefighter.
That's right.
And he is hot as fuck.
Yes, he
Hello.
Is.
Hello. So this firefighter... recently married his partner, and after his marriage was put on desk duty, literally removed from his position to be put on desk duty because what it seems like from this article, his commander, or however you would call it, wasn't okay with him being gay.
Yeah.
And would make negative comments about his relationship, and now... he is no longer in the position he once was.
And that sucks. And only because he married the person that he loves. Actually, his name is Scott Phillips Gartner. Is it Gartner? He's 55 years old. He's actually from Norfolk. I'm going to assume
Virginia.
Yeah. But, you know, can't really say. But it's heartbreaking, right? Because here we are. Marriage equality is legal in all 50 states for now. Because you just never know what happens with the Supreme Court.
I don't think it's going anywhere.
I just don't understand how somebody could go from being at the level he was to being put on a desk job for no reason. Like, what was the reasoning behind it?
You know,
it makes no sense.
In my experience, right, because I work in corporate America and I've worked in different aspects of other places. In my experience, when someone has it for you, they can really find or try to just make up any excuse to sort of kind of get you out of their way. And it just seems to me that the person who's actually managing this individual, or that was at one point in time, is sort of kind of feels threatened by the fact that this person may at some point end up in his job and sort of kind of say, no, this is not going to happen. Also,
but like, it's like he was an assistant fire marshal and a bomb squad technician. So like that level of skill takes a long time to cultivate, right?
Yeah, it does.
And so now you're taking somebody that has the skill that could prevent future problems and putting them on a desk job because they married their lifetime partner.
And to me, it's, you know, again, marriage equality is the law of the land. And if you're going to fire someone because you don't agree with the person who they love, then that just opens up a can of worms and an opportunity for this individual to...
There is a court case, though, that's being brought to the Supreme Court about the ability to fire LGBTQ people based on orientation, so...
The Virginia Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme
the
Court?
The U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, there's a lot
there's
of...
There's several. Yeah.
There's several cases that are coming up on the docket for this upcoming term.
And they haven't said they're going to take any of them, but they are on the docket, yeah.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, it poses a risk because we do now know that
Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, especially Kavanaugh.
Exactly. We do have a very conservative majority in the court that could alter the way we see our freedoms as we live our lives every day, and it could have a lot of you know, implications in states and in a lot of red states. Like, people think, for example, that it could not affect you, but if you live in the heart of America, right, they call the middle America the heart of America, but you know, if you live in states in where they tend to be very Republican, you're at risk of losing your rights. And I'm blessed to live in a state, and sometimes I even wonder, like Connecticut, or in the Northeast, or like people that live out West, that could, you know, have their rights protected statewide at a state level. But federally, if you live in a state that is in Middle America, you're like at risk.
The Bible Belt.
Yeah, of course. You're literally at risk of losing your rights to be a human being. And it's very disturbing.
Unless the Supreme Court
either rejects.
Right.
But here's the thing. It's a tricky thing, right? Because the reason why some of these court cases end up at the Supreme Court is because they couldn't find resolution
in a lower court. Right.
And if those decisions that were made at those lower courts impact against the LGBT community and the Supreme Court decides not to take the case, whatever ruling that lower court ruled on,
that stands.
It stands. Yeah, and that's scary.
Right. Exactly.
So it just goes to show you that, you know, it's sad that he loved someone so much and he wanted to marry them, and now he's in a position where he actually lost his job as a result of doing that.
Well, I mean, you look at the article too, and so his chief, Roger Burris, mocked Phillips throughout 2015, treating him poorly, asking him where Miss Gartner was in staff meetings. I mean, like, that in itself is scary enough. Like, yeah. when you're like, all right, I'm committing to marrying the person that I love, and he already kind of probably knew his job was on the line. And like, how is that right?
And that's open discrimination right there.
No, clearly. Of course it is. Like, how is it right that, like, I'm marrying somebody that I care for and want to spend the rest of my life with, and you're going to take away my right to my job that, I'm sorry, clearly...
He's qualified for.
He moved up the ranks from just being a dispatcher to this person who is now a bomb detector. Like, he goes in and, like, helps save lives. And you took that ability of this man away from the American people. You took the ability for him to save lives away from the American people based on the fact that he was a homosexual.
Right, and the article says that Phillips Gartner was well-regarded by superiors and colleagues until he informed the city's HR department that he had gotten married.
Another thing that was also mentioned in the article is that in 2016, Norfolk implemented a non-discrimination policy protecting city employees from being unfairly treated on the basis of sexual orientation. And so if that's the case, it seems like we have a situation where this man who married the person that he loves could potentially have a really good case.
I know, does have a case. His attorney's on it. So.
Oh, and good. You know what?
Win that shit.
Exactly. I hope he does. Like, seriously, it's really sad to see when states, especially southern states, right, that Mason-Dixie line is just, anything south of that is just really tricky when it comes to LGBT rights and how people are treated regardless of what federal law says that we must abide by.
So his attorney, Barry Montgomery, says that Phillips wound up retiring amid the threats of being fired. And then, again, said this is not the way he wanted to leave. It was humiliating.
So,
I'm sorry to call you out, though. It's Mason-Dixon line.
Mason-Dixon. I say Dixie because it's that much more gay.
Okay, stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I just had to. I'm sorry.
Mason-Dixon. You're right. Yes. So, anything that line crosses.
I mean, this guy is 55 years old.
Yeah.
Like, let him fucking be happy, for Christ's fucking sake. He, like, just let him be happy. He still has
a long and healthy life ahead of
him. And he serves the community.
That's right.
He takes care of these people. He makes sure that this community is safe.
No, this community where he lives made sure that he will no longer make sure that that community is safe.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, disgusting.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's, you know, their loss.
It makes me think about, you guys remember last November, not this past November, November before last, when we did the transgender spotlight, we had Bobby Ashton on the show, and we talked about how Mrs. Ashton is a firefighter, and she was Mr. Ashton before, Mrs. Ashton after. She's been a part of the fire department in East Haven, Connecticut.
And right across from where I used to live.
That's right. And, you know, she experienced her own issues, but, you know, she overcame them, and she's received a lot of support from her peers. My thing is, it's like, it costs you nothing to be a decent human being. This person who is obviously making this man, obviously made this man lose his job and making this man's life impossible, is just really someone who is mean, bigoted, and just doesn't really deserve the title of being a decent human being.
Or being a fucking chief officer, like, at all.
Like, seriously, he should be removed from that position.
Yeah, because what he did, you act that way.
What he did was literally take away potential safety of others.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Safety. You can't lead. You cannot be a leader. You cannot be a commander if that is your mental.
Mm-hmm.
Mental what? State?
If that's just your mental.
I don't understand that concept.
Yeah, I think there would be totally a lot more mental. Mental, that's a lot, Chris.
If that's your mental state, if that's your mental concept. No, you can just say your mental. No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
No.
Your thought process, maybe?
No. That's
Chris, you're not going to win this one. That's not grammatically correct. That's not right. You can't just say if that's your mental.
This is not college.
That's how your brain works. These bitches.
Oh,
Chris,
my
but
God.
We love you. We do.
I am mad.
All right. So, Nick, you did say that you mentioned you had another story that you wanted to end on a good note with.
Obviously, Ellen.
Oh, Ellen.
I love Ellen. Mm-hmm. I basically am Ellen.
What does she do?
So, actually, she didn't do it, but she did indirectly. So, Gus Kenworthy helps a college student come out via Ellen.
Oh,
I know. Let alone that this person looks a lot like somebody I know, which makes me like, But anyway, so John, a 20-year-old student from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, hadn't told any of his family, his parents, that he was gay, but he had told his friends, and he was struggling with the concept of coming out because he didn't know how they would react, just like all of us feel. And so he ended up coming out on television, which doesn't make sense to me, because, like, if you're scared, that's probably not the best venue, but... I
will tell you, though, one of the biggest shows of strength that any human can actually portray or display is the guts and the courage to actually look at someone and say, I am gay. It is an absolute beautiful thing to see. I think it's amazingly courageous, right? Because it's very scary. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Right, Chris? Crickets.
Yeah, no, it wasn't scary for her.
It wasn't scary for you?
I mean, not really.
Okay, well, we know it was scary for Trish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was scary for me. I mean, you know, I was 14 years old when I came out to my aunts, who were questioning me. So, are you going to do it or are you not going to do it? Are you going to come out? Well, what are you talking about? Do I have to, right? And they were like, yeah, it's about time. I mean, like, seriously. And these were my two younger aunts on my father's side that were literally pinned me against the wall trying to figure out whether or not I was actually going to come out to them. Like, fine. Yes, I am. Big deal. You know, but my uncle's gay and my aunt's a lesbian. And both my father's siblings. So
I'm the first in my family. So
really?
Yeah.
Huh. I would have thought that maybe you have someone just...
No, she...
She was the trailblazer.
Yeah, she was.
Interesting. So this college student comes out, and do we know how he's doing?
So, he's doing really good. And I mean, he had the support of Gus Kenworthy. Hello.
That's right.
And Ashley Graham as well, who I guess is like creating an entire platform for the LGBTQ+ community. She recently did something with a transgender individual and helped me out. I'm blanking. Orange is the New Black. Help me. I feel like a dumbass right now.
Laverne Cox?
Yes, Laverne Cox, where this transgender individual had never met another trans individual, and they brought them together. So she's been doing really positive things for the LGBTQ plus community, which is awesome.
Are you talking about Laverne or?
Laverne. Well, okay. No. Ashley Graham is giving a platform for.
She has, yes.
So, but anyway, so he came out to his parents on the air, and they were super supportive. They said, "Oh, honey," his mother started, "you know what? Like, that's so fine. I love you." And then his father interjects saying, "Love you too, buddy." And then they ended up showing up on the show. They flew him out, obviously. And it was
Did he know that they were coming on the show?
No.
Oh, so they surprised.
Yeah.
Ellen has a way of doing
it. So it wasn't Ellen's show, but somehow Ellen is involved in this because they sent the family to Ellen's 12 Days of Giveaways.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So they all had a chance to meet with Ellen. So it was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so we have another gay individual, and he was supported by some really amazing people.
So, and because I know Trish too well, I know that this video, which you should watch, is going to end up on tonight's post.
Yeah.
So.
I cried.
He did. He was like, you know what? I was actually doing some sound checks. I'll give you a little bit of background. Earlier today, before we started the show, and he's like, "All right, I have to go watch this video." So he literally left. He went upstairs, and he comes down. I just cried. Okay, I'm done. I got my cry out of the way. He's like, "All right, we can start the show now." And it is a very heartwarming video. We encourage that you watch it, and it will be on tonight's post. So that being said, we are going to move on to, of course, our two final things that we do before we wrap up the show for you guys.
Awesome.
Starting with the first one is
mental is a noun, by the way. Mental can be a noun.
Again, you're wrong here.
No.
You can't use it the way you used it.
Yes, it can.
I knew he was looking this up. It's an adjective. I'm watching him. I'm watching him over there, and I'm like, no, Chris.
It's an adjective. It's like saying
it sounds weird. It does not work. I'm sorry, it doesn't work.
English is weird and does not work.
Yeah, I know.
So welcome to your native tongue.
But again, I'm right, you're wrong.
I can't use this bottle the way
I'm sorry.
That's not even like words. I can't use this bottle the way I want to use it, right?
Can we close this out? I want to go home.
She's nasty. All right, so why don't we start with our gay talk term?
All right, everybody. Your gay talk term, of course, brought to you by
unicornbooty.com.
Not mental.
I was about to say something, too. I was totally going for that. You're fucking with my mental, bitch.
Honey, everybody is. Kumquat is your term this week.
Yes.
Kumquat means a gob of ejaculated semen. One would say, while clearing the throat, I have a kumquat in my throat. Kumquat is your gay talk term this week, brought to you by unicornbooty.com.
So, Christopher, do you have a kumquat?
Not right now.
I've had a kumquat.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of kind of referring to her weekend, you know?
Oh, no.
It was a good weekend.
Yeah. That person had a kumquat, but he didn't have a kumquat. Anyway.
All right, so my turn.
I did not have one. But yes, Christopher, it is your turn.
It's my turn. So, on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
UnicornBooty.com.
When? December 3rd?
Not really.
Ew.
You're nasty.
No, wait. I was trying to say, what was that word?
Mental.
Kumquat.
And I had a burp. You had to get
rid of that kumquat. You had to empty that kumquat.
This week's gay talk term is brought to you. Gay day in history. Oh, fuck. I'm fucking up. Yeah, Chris, take it away.
Yeah, I'm going to take it away, okay? So when? December 3rd, 2012. Where? We're going to go to Thailand. Thai airline recruits transgender flight attendants. The Bangkok Post published an article about PC Air hiring four transgender cabin crew members after a recruitment drive. A local transgender activist says it helps promote a positive image of Thai transsexuals beyond certain stereotypes. One of the new flight attendants says, "This is just like my dream come true,
and maybe this is the first step for trans ladies, transgenders, to have a good job in the future.
Woo, that lady's flying high.
That's
no, but
right.
But it's not the first. Well, it is. It was the first, right, at the time, or at least in 2012. But Virgin Atlantic also has an all drag queen. Like,
no, I remember that. We had talked about that.
We talked about that before. Right? It's so cool. I just want to go fly and see what these drag queens are like. Because if it's anything like Lips in New York, you don't want that flight.
I just want to see how they react with the old bitchy woman who's like, her ears are popping.
And her husband's like, interested. And
it's honey, just like, honey, honey, pop a NyQuil. Put a couple of cotton swabs in your ears with a little bit of rubbing alcohol and you'll be fine.
Shut and if NyQuil up. Doesn't do the trick, look for Trish. She has a pill for you.
I'll bring you some vodka.
I'll look for Trish, though.
Oh, my God. All right, I feel like if I were to go on an actual flight where drag queens were the flight attendants, I would probably be hammered the entire time and laughing and having a good time.
That's the only way I fly.
Yeah,
people look at me like I'm crazy, but then they stay away from me, so I have space.
Well, he's no terrorist, but he is crazy.
And Harry. Anyway.
Very. All right. So listen, guys, thank you for joining us today on today's episode. If you love the show, make sure that you rate and review on your favorite podcasting service. This helps us know, this helps others know about the show and ensures that it becomes more visible within our podcasting community. By subscribing to the show, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as the episode is published. And as most of you know, you can also support us on Patreon, which is a service that allows you, our listeners, and our patrons to support the show with a nominal amount, anywhere between a dollar to whatever you want to give us. We'll take it all, and you'll have access to our video live stream via Patreon.
We finally got a paycheck.
We did. We finally got paid 3 years later. And so that being said, Christopher?
I have electricity in my apartment now, so thank you guys.
That's not I'm kidding.
So Trish has obviously been super busy. So next week you can expect another episode where the dish is front and center. You're just going to be listening to us because she's been slacking a little bit.
Yeah, well, she's been busy.
Can I fucking hold the phone for a second? Because I'm pretty sure I'm the only motherfucker in this room that books people. So unless you want to book somebody, don't fucking come at me, motherfucker.
And it's funny that she says that because we haven't had a guest in 3 weeks.
But we're having a guest coming on soon.
She's just...
I got to support a little bit.
She's falling apart. But she's falling apart.
No, she's not.
Or maybe, you know, she started a new job.
I said you're super busy, bitch. Read your line.
Oh, my God. Did you write something? What? All right.
Love you.
That being said,
I'm going to fucking murder her.
That's right.
I welcome it right now. I'm about to throw her
under the bus anyway. So,
what did I do?
Nothing. You have an announcement to make.
No, I do.
Trish is next.
No. Not that kind of announcement, but you have an announcement to make.
What?
Come January.
We'll wait.
You want to wait?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, we'll wait.
She's pregnant. Yeah. That's what she's trying to get at. So the Hartford Gay Men's Chorus has their upcoming holiday concert, And To All a Good Night, coming up December 7th, 8th, and 9th.
That's this week.
Tickets for the event can be purchased by visiting tickets.hgmc.org. Use discount code GAYTALK18 and have all your handling fees waived at checkout.
That's all the handling fees that does this.
Mm-hmm. You can also visit hgmac.org for more information. Also, Chris, fuck off.
I didn't do anything. I literally did nothing.
Chris, you got a box of rubbers.
All right, can we
pick a color?
Fucking put a rubber on this because I'm tired of...
Can we use a pink condom?
Or a blue one.
I want the pink one.
I'm just...
Pink is beautiful. Shut up. Go.
Excuse me. I had a burp. All right. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces, Chris is going to book the next guest, and you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at GayTalk2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can do so by heading over to our website, clicking on the Contact Us tab right at the top of your web browser, where you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or for Chris. You can also
super
call
busy.
Us. Mm-hmm. Now that he's got that new hot little hottie. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
We'll see.
But anyway, you can also call us and leave us a question via voice
Fuck
message.
You both.
We can answer your question on the show. That phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need all the digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do a stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. That is our show. And y'all have a good night. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.